You may be seated this morning. Hey, we are glad that you are here this morning. And we are in this Advent season, as you can see. And it can be exciting, right? Christmas time in our minds anyway, it's exciting, isn't it? And then the reality of, oh, we've got to go do this, and we've got to do that, and we've got to go to this kids' event, or, you know, we got all this stuff going on. And then we have the stress of the finances, you know, if you didn't plan for Christmas, right? And so that brings the stress there. And then, and so it can become a very stressful time. And for some people, it can become a time when it brings back a lot of memories, and so sadness can come, and actually depression. It can, in fact, they say that during the holiday season, depression starts to rise. Well, over the next five Sundays, we want to be looking at this right here, Jesus. We think that we can look right into the scriptures. We think that, we know. Here's what I know is that as we look at Jesus and this idea of who is Jesus, here's what I know that the Bible shows us. I know this is true. The more we can understand who Jesus is, the deeper our hope. Now, when I say use the word hope, think faith. Okay, our hope, our faith. So the more we can understand who Jesus is, the deeper our faith. The deeper our faith or hope, the deeper our peace. The deeper our peace, the greater our joy. Here's what I know, that the more that we can understand who Jesus is, then we can put more of our hope in Jesus. And then as we put our hope in Jesus, and as that grows, and it grows deeper, because there's all different levels of hope that all of you have. All of us have different levels of our faith or our hope in Jesus. But as it grows, it will bring a peace within you. And then there's this result, as that continues to grow, it brings a joy. Here's how I know this, because in the book of Colossians, and this is where we're going to be the rest of the month, in the book of Colossians, some of you thought we were going to go to the Gospels, didn't you? Because we're talking about Jesus, those of you who go to church. But those of you, you're like, Colossians, yeah, Jesus, man, is all over this book. It's so cool to watch how this happens. But notice what the Apostle Paul, as he writes this letter to these believers in this city called Colossae, and in Turkey. That's, so think Turkey, the country Turkey, and there's this little city called Colossae, and he is writing to them, and he says, "We have not stopped praying for you since we first heard about you. We ask God to give you complete knowledge of his will." You know, they had some understanding of his will, but Paul, the Apostle Paul, understands there's some room for growing. And he says, to give you spiritual wisdom and spiritual understanding. So again, there's this inference that there's some growth that can happen or that needs to happen, because none of us have arrived. They hadn't arrived. He goes on, "Then the way you live will always honor and please the Lord." You see, as we grow, as the depth of our hope grows, then we will grow. And notice what happens. It changes our life. Our lives will produce every kind of good fruit. All the while, you will grow as you learn to know God better and better. We also pray that you will be strengthened with all of his glorious power, so that you will have all the endurance and patience to last through Christmas, right? So that you will have all the endurance and patience to last. May you be filled with joy, always thanking the Father. All of this comes right from Colossians. And then in the chapter 3, verse 15, he says, and let the peace that comes from Christ rule in your life. Let the peace of Christ that rules Let it rule your life. So there is this thing that we can give our life to Jesus, but we haven't really fully let the peace of Christ really rule every area of our life. This is how I know this statement is true. The more we can understand of who Jesus is the deeper our hope. The deeper our hope, the deeper our peace, and the deeper our peace, the greater our joy. That's what I love. So here's the idea that all of us in here, all of us can grow. All of us can grow in our understanding of who Jesus is. It doesn't matter if today, if this is like the first time you're on Jesus 101. That's great. We are so glad that you're here. Or maybe you're even pre-Jesus 101. That's even awesome too, right? But some of you here have been like Jesus for 30 years. And here, the idea, it doesn't matter where you are on the scale of knowing who Jesus is, there's always something more that you can learn, that you can understand. And it's just like this. Have you ever had a friend, actually students, how many of you got friends at school, right? And you hang out with them at school, but then that's like one area. But then you go hang out at the mall with them. And then you're like, oh, you discovered some new stuff about your friend because now you're in a whole new different setting. Right? But then you go spend the night at their house. Come on. Now, how many of you ever, slept over at your friend's house and you're like, oh my gosh, this is a whole nother dynamic. Look at the way their family interacts with each other. Look at what their dad does. Oh my gosh, my dad would never do that. Right? You see something and it gives you a totally different perspective. Some of you have had friends and colleagues that you have had lunch with and that you've hung out with. And then you thought you really knew them. But then one day, you're sitting across the lunch table from them, and they tell you something about their past, and you're like, oh my gosh. All of a sudden in your mind, all these dots start connecting. You're like, that's the reason why you're so passionate about this area of your life, right? You thought you already knew them, but you got to a whole new level of understanding of who they are and why they are as you grew to get to know them. The same thing is true with Jesus. Sometimes we think we know Jesus, and then all of a sudden we read something. We're like, oh my gosh, that is mind blowing. That's what we want to do this morning, as we want to do that. So let's jump into Colossians chapter 1, verses 15 through 17. We're just going to look at a couple of verses today. And in theology, if you wanted to prove the supremacy of Christ, this is where you would go. This is like the standard passage. If you wanted to prove that Jesus Christ really does rule over everything, then you would want to go to that passage right here. So let's read verse number 15. It says, Christ is the visible image of the invisible God. Let's just stop right there, take that first sentence, and right away we learn two things. One, we learn that God is invisible. God has no body. God is a spirit. There is no body connected to God. God just is. But what we learn is that Christ is the image. He is the visible image of this invisible God. It's in some of your translations, it use the word likeness there. And I want you to think about this. I want you to think about in the morning, right? When you get up and you look in the mirror, right? When you look in the mirror, you don't see your spouse. When I look in here, I'm not looking and saying, oh, I see Zoe. No, when you look in the mirror, you see your image and all of its imperfections, don't you? And sometimes some of you don't do anything about it. Come on now, look a little deeper, you know? You need to wipe that stuff off your face, all right? You got something going on there, right? Or you may need to squeeze that a little harder, if you know what I mean. Students, you know what I mean, right? You look in your ears a little bit closer. There's some stuff growing way out, right? Get the weed whacker, some of you, you know, and get it out of there. I don't know. But listen, hey, you look in here. As you look in here, you see what is. Here's the really cool thing about this that just disappeared. Look at the side screens. It says that Christ is the visible image of this invisible God. Here's what we know is, whoops, wrong one. Here's what we know. The Son radiates God's own glory and expresses the very character of God. We find that from Hebrews chapter 1 and verse number 3. That Christ, that Jesus, who is Jesus? He exhibits the very character of God. So here's what I want you to do. I want us real quickly to be able to ask this question. How do we know what God is like? Well, we can look at who Jesus is because he's the visible image of God. And Hebrews just told us that he expresses the very character of God. So as we do that, this is why it's so important for you guys, for me, to read our Bibles. We have to read our Bible more than just showing up at church. I'm talking about at home. You need to read your Bibles. And real quickly, I'm just going to give you three incidences here, three examples of as we look at Jesus, we can understand that God's character is full of mercy. How do we know that? Because when we look at Jesus, he expresses the exact character of God. So, as we look at Luke chapter 19, we see that Jesus is full of mercy. He comes across this guy named Zacchaeus. There was a man named Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector in the region, and he had become very rich. What we need to understand about Zacchaeus is he was a Jewish guy who betrayed his own people. He became a traitor to them. He turned his back on them. He decided that he was going to align himself with the Roman Empire so that he could become rich. The people hated him. You talk about breaking the backs of somebody. He was like overtaxing his own people. And he was becoming more and more wealthy. And Jesus comes by, he's walking through Jericho, and there's this crowd of people, and Zacchaeus is like, I'm going to check this guy out. And he must have really wanted to see him, because, you know, he climbed the tree, at least the song said so. And he climbs up in the tree, and he looks out there, and Jesus comes by and says, hey, I'm coming to your house today. And Zacchaeus is like, whoa, nobody wants to hang out with me. What? You know, he's like blown away by this. Why didn't they? Because he knew that he was robbing his own people. He knew that other people looked at him with disdain, with disgust, but not Jesus. And Jesus goes and hangs out at his house, and something transforming happened there. Because Zacchaeus all of a sudden comes to this recognition that, man, I am going to make sure the poor, any poor person I know, they have whatever they need. I'm going to give my wealth away to them. And then anybody that I rob, any of my Jewish brothers or sisters, I'm paying them back four times of what I took from them. And here's how Jesus responded to that. Salvation has come to this home today. This man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save those who were lost. God's character is to express mercy to those who do not deserve it. Zacchaeus did not deserve the mercy of Jesus. He did not deserve that Jesus would come into his home. And everybody knew it. In fact, if you read the story, everybody's talking about it. How can you go to that guy's house? He's so evil. He's so crooked. He's, you know, whatever. He's a thief. And yet Jesus shows that he is full of mercy. How do we know that God is full of mercy? Because Jesus lives this out. He is full of mercy. Now, let's notice something else. Full of compassion. Jesus is full of compassion. In John chapter 11, we have the death of Lazarus. And there, the sisters go send for Jesus. Hey, come. And Jesus finally shows up, but now Lazarus has been dead for 4 days, right? But when Jesus shows up, he enters into the brokenness of the people right where they are. And in John 11:35, it says that Jesus wept. He wept. He's full of compassion. In Luke 19, at the end of the chapter, as he leaves Jericho and as he's about ready to come to Jerusalem, he stops over Jerusalem before he gets there. And the Bible says he wept. He was full of compassion. He wept for the city. Why? Because he knew there were people that didn't know him. He knew that there were people who didn't put any of their hope or any of their faith in him. And it broke his heart. This is how we know that God has a heart full of compassion, because we can see it in Jesus' character. And then we see that he is full of passion. He is full of passion for injustice. In Matthew chapter 21, Jesus entered the temple and began to drive out all the people buying and selling animals for sacrifice. He knocked over the tables of the money changers, and the tables wasn't enough, so he kicks out their chairs too, right? And the chairs of those selling the doves. Why did he do that? because there is an injustice happening. Look what he says. He says this. He says, and he said to them, the scriptures declare that my temple will be called a house of prayer, but you have turned it into a den of thieves. What the injustice that was happening, where there were people showing up there that couldn't afford to offer the sacrifice that they needed to because of the prices that they were charging. And that made Jesus angry. And he's like flipping the tables and kicking the chairs out because of the injustice that is happening. This is how we know that the character of God is full of passion for the injustice that happens in our world. Because it was true in Jesus' life. When you read your Bible, you need to ask yourself, what is this teaching me about who Jesus is? Because when it teaches you about who Jesus is, then it's teaching us about who God is. So how do we know what God is like? Jesus lives out in word and deed who God is. Who is Jesus? Let's continue to read our verse in verse 15, the next phrase. It says, he existed. This is Jesus. Jesus existed before anything was created. Now, hold on. Some of you are thinking, dude, no, he came into Bethlehem. He was born in a manger. The Bible even tells us that. Yeah, but you know what? Before then, Jesus already existed. He was already in existence. And how one way that we know this is because there, but in Colossians in 15, but in Genesis 1:26, when they are given the creation account, notice the plurality of these verbs that they use. Then God said, let us make human beings in our image, right? There's that plurality. Jesus was there in the very beginning. This is who Jesus is. He has always existed. He just didn't show up one day in Bethlehem in the manger. Now, as we continue to read, he existed before anything was created, and he is supreme over all creation. He is supreme. That means he rules over everything. As we continue, for through him, meaning Jesus, for through Jesus, God created everything in the heavenly realms. Think universe, think galaxies. And then he says, and on earth. And he made the things that we can see and the things that we can't see. And then he gives some examples, such as thrones. You know, that's the kingdom power, you know, the power that they can see. Such as kingdoms and rulers. No, this was, don't forget, the oppression of the Roman Empire at this time was huge. And the authorities in the unseen world. Now, there was some heresy that was going on. One of the reasons for the letter is because these new believers were starting to hear about this hierarchy of angels, this angelology. And Paul is like, hold on. Jesus is greater than anything that you think you're learning about angels right now. Jesus is supreme even over the authorities in the unseen world. Everything was created through him, through Jesus. Everything was created. Stop and think about that. Everything that you can see in creation was created by Jesus. And everything that you cannot see. Let's say everything in physics, it was created by Jesus. And everything in metaphysics, the things that you can't see, was created by Jesus. He existed before anything was, and he holds all things, all creation together. Let's pretend you're in New Hampshire. All right, New Hampshire is a great place to go. You need to go to New Hampshire. Right? You go to New Hampshire. You're at the foot of one of the smaller mountains, one of the hills there, and you just look up, and you just see God's beauty. You just see it out there, and it's like amazing because it's dark. Everything is dark, but the sky. Because there's no city, there's no nothing, no metropolitan area, and you're looking up there, and you're just like, oh my goodness. The heavens declare the glories of God. That's what we're seeing here. Now, I mean, that in itself is like, oh my gosh, and Jesus holds all that together, right? But let's back out a little bit, and let's say the earth. Ooh, that looks ugly. let's look at that one over there. But just stop and think about this. We got the earth, pull out, you know. We think about how the earth, you know, rotates and revolves around the sun. But just think about how magnificent this earth is, and the gravitational pull, and everything is just right. Jesus holds it all together. But let's pull out a little bit more into the sun. Did you know that 1.3 million Earths will fit into our sun? 1.3 million. We think our Earth is big. Oh my goodness, our one sun. 1.3 million Earths will fit inside of our sun. Our Earth is pretty small. But Jesus holds the sun. Holds it all together. And I remember being a kid, and I am definitely not a science person, right? I'm not even going to pretend to be. But I remember being a kid and thinking, the sun is like the biggest star out there. Oh my goodness. That's so not true. You know, NASA has discovered stars that dwarf. I found one image that our sun looks like smaller than a period, you know, and you've got this, and it would be like our church next to it. I mean, it's just amazing of what is out there. And, you know, because you think and stop and think about our own Milky Galaxy, our own Milky Way galaxy. Not the Milky Way bar, I almost said that, didn't I? But think about just our own galaxy and understand that now they say that they have discovered 100 billion galaxies that are out there as science continues to go out there and look. Science is a great discovery of who Jesus is because he holds it all together. We should not be scared of science. In fact, here's an agnostic. His name is Robert Jastrow. He worked for NASA for several years. And then when he was done working at NASA, he went to go work at Dartmouth. He was their Department of Earth and Sciences at Dartmouth until 92. But here's what he says, and this is a quote from him. Now we see how the astronomical evidence supports the biblical view. Don't forget, this is an agnostic. And this is years of diving, of studying him, of him studying our galaxy, the cosmology. You know, this is years of this. And he came to this conclusion. That now we see how the astronomical evidence supports the biblical view of the origin of the world. From an agnostic, he says, the details differ, but the essential elements in the astronomical and the biblical accounts of Genesis are the same. The chain of events leading to man commenced suddenly and sharply at a definite moment in time in a flash of light and energy. Then he goes on to say that astronomers find now they have painted themselves into a corner because they have proven by their own methods that the world began abruptly in an act of creation to which we can trace the seeds of every star, every planet, every living thing in the cosmos and on Earth. And they have found that all this happened as a product of forces they cannot hope to discover, that they are all what I or anyone would call supernatural forces at work among us. And he says, I think, is now a scientifically proven fact. Now that's from an agnostic. And as far as I know, he has yet to give his life to Jesus. This other guy, because of science, because of him digging in to our galaxies and studying this, and as he would uncover one thing after another, He says this. He says his name is Alan Rex Sandage. He was an American astronomer, famously known for his observational cosmology. In this, I quote, "It was my science that drove me to the conclusion that the world is much more complicated than can be explained by science. It is only through the supernatural that I can understand the mystery of the existence." So we, as Christ followers, as Christians, we don't have to shy away from science. We can dive right into it. And here we can see one guy, it drove him to Jesus. Because it, to him, it was like there's no other explanation but to say that God created everything that we see. So, who is Jesus? He is the image of this invisible God. He exudes the very character of who God is. He's worthy of your hope. Who is Jesus? He is the expression of God's character. Who is Jesus? He is the one who holds all creation together. And Jesus is worthy of us putting our hope deeper into, so that there'll be this deeper peace within us. And as a result of that, a greater joy that cannot be found in any other place. And so here's what I want you to do. Will you take out your connection card this morning and look at this first next step? This is for all of us. And I know this does not sound like Advent reading, okay? You're like, Rick, you're reading the book of Colossians. I know, but you know what? I'm telling you. Can we as a church read through the book of Colossians? And as we read through the book of Colossians this Advent season, can you ask yourself, who is Jesus? Here's what I'm asking you to do. I will commit to reading through the letter of Colossians one chapter a week. That's just one chapter a week. Let me tell you something. I'm like the world's slowest reader in this room, right? I can read the whole book in 16 minutes, and it was 22 seconds. I timed myself, all right? So I know that you can read one chapter. You've got time to read one chapter a week, all right? So come on, you can commit to this. Commit to reading through the letter of Colossians, just one chapter a week for the month of December. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to ask God to help me to understand who Jesus is. Will you do that? And man, by the end of the month, here's what I know will happen, that Jesus will give you a little bit more about who he is. And as a result of that, you will have a greater confidence in who Jesus is. And as a result of that, there'll be this greater peace inside of you. And as a result of that, there'll be a greater joy. And that means that you can go through the Advent season with joy inside of you instead of stress and worry and, well, how am I going to pay that, you know? Because this is why. So, will you take your connection card? Will you check that off? Let us know that you're committed to doing that. And you can even do this. You know, some of you are like still stuck on your Advent reading. I understand it. Here's another way. I was thinking about this. How can I get those people who are stuck on Advent readings? Okay, and which is nothing. I've done Advent readings. They're great. I'm not discouraging them at all. But here's another way. If you download the Bible app onto your phone, it will read it to you on your way to work, right? Dude, you could be listening to the whole chapter, the whole book, right? The whole letter you could listen to just on one commute on your way to work, right? Because it takes me 20 minutes to get here. So I could listen to the whole book of Colossians on just one way of the commute. You could do that on your way there. And what if you just stopped it at the one chapter and then just listen to that chapter again? Right? I'm telling you, it will change you. It will. It will change you if you give it a chance. The next step is pray that God will fill me with a deeper sense of hope and peace this Christmas season. Hey, I don't want to overlook those of you where the Christmas season is hard and where the weight of this Christmas season weighs on you. You don't find a whole lot of joy in Christmas because of hurt and pain. But as you get to know Jesus, and as your hope goes deeper in who Jesus is, the result of that is that there will be joy. So, we want to pray for you. And if that's you, on Tuesday, we'll pray for you by name. And we'll ask that this year will be different. That this Advent year, it will be different. That your Christmas season, that there would be a peace inside of you that you hadn't experienced before. And then lastly, that last next step is if you're here and you haven't put your faith in Christ yet, you admit it. You're like, man, I've been coming here. I don't know what it is. I just haven't done it yet. I'm just not ready yet. Would you just acknowledge that and say, hey, will you pray for me? And we will definitely be praying for you on Tuesday. That Jesus will show you that he's worthy of you transferring your faith in whatever it's in right now, because you have a faith. Everybody has a faith, and they put it in something. And I'm telling you, Jesus is worthy of you moving your faith from wherever it is now into who he is. And we want to pray for you. Just make sure you put those connection cards in the offering boxes as you leave. Let's all stand.